Are you a spoiler?
No, I'm not a spoiler, but I'm immortal, and therefore nothing surprises me.
Spoilers, maximum.
Nicolas Flamel, warning you that the crimes of Grindelwald are contained, uncensored forthwith.
Episode 76 of Speak Beastie for December the 16th, 2018. You've got me, Lizzie.
I'm Oriel.
I'm Megan. And today we have a very special guest on the show with us, Mr. James Payton.
Oh, God, he's terrible, that guy. I wouldn't have him. Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
Thank you, that's very kind.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? What is your Hogwarts house? And what do you do in your muggle life?
I certainly will. So I am fortunately in Gryffindor.
Yay!
Because, you know, I was a little bit concerned because I thought when I went on Pottermore to find out which house I was in, I was thinking, God, it's not gonna, if it doesn't put me in Gryffindor, then what have I become? fortunately, it did. So I thought, then I'll get my Patronus, and I thought, well, it's going to be like a tank or a motorboat or something like that. Or at least a panther, something exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's just say that's what happened.
And did you get a Solomon?
Well, if I wish. No, I got a rat. A rat.
Aww. Well,
thanks, Joe. Cheers, Joe. Thanks for that one.
I think you've just joined the whole fandom with everyone hating their Patronus. So congratulations, you're officially part of the Potter fandom now.
Hey! Do I get some sort of hat?
Yeah.
Is there a badge? So what am I doing? Am I telling you about who I am, what I do?
Yes, please.
Oh. Well, James Payton, that's me, probably best known for playing the unfortunate Frank Longbottom in Order of the Phoenix.
Woo! I mean, not woo for what happened to Frank Longbottom, but woo for you.
You take it as you see it, it's fine, I'm not here to... It's just so you know, it's quite hurtful, it's quite hurtful. The other claim to fame, I suppose, would be playing Adolf Hitler in Captain America, the First Avenger.
I just found out about that last night, and I was just so excited. I love you, that. I love that so
Hitler
much.
You played Hitler twice, though, didn't you? Didn't you play in Monuments Men too?
That's what they say on the. That's what it says in the credits. I don't really remember. I'm an aging actor. I can't remember things. So yes, absolutely, I do. I do work as an actor, and not only that, I work as a stand-in on many films over the last 20 odd years, including new Fantastic Beasts films, and I work as a snow technician, of all things.
Oh.
On things like the recent Star Wars movies, The Holiday, which everybody seems to love.
Yes.
And all of those things. A special effects snow technician. So the fake snow that you see in movies, that's probably us. Snow business.
That's very cool. Because I feel like it would be a lot more difficult than you would think to make it look realistic. I think if I tried to make fake snow look realistic, it would look terrible. But on the holiday, it looks great.
Yeah, it's all fake. Yeah, it's snow business have been running for over 30 years. So they, you know, in terms of the product that they use, they really know what they're doing. And I've been with them since Charlie and the Chocolate Factory back in 2004.
Oh my gosh!
So quite a long time. But yeah, it's an amazing. The products we have are amazing.
So you're a little bit of a jack of all trades in terms of film and all the different things that go along with it, kind of.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of maybe one of those three, I guess. I won't tell you which one.
You're probably a master of all of them.
Well, you know, I've been doing them long enough. You'd think I'd have a clue what I was doing.
Everything I've seen you do has been excellent.
Like you. Thank you, I'll take it. That's me still busking around after 20 odd years in the glamorous life of show business.
So we're very excited to have James on to talk to us a little bit about his work, especially in terms of Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts. And we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, we're going to roll into the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
The first thing I have to tell you is that you should check out our crossover episode with Hogwarts Radio, which came out last week. And Ariel and Amy joined the team at Hogwarts Radio to have a chat about Fantastic Beasts and Crimes of Grindelwald specifically. And it's excellent. So you should listen to it if you haven't done that yet. The other thing I want to talk about is, Lizzie, you went to the Paris premiere of Crimes of Grindelwald.
I did!
And
honestly,
how was it?
Well, pretty obviously it was like the highlight of my life. luckily I don't have any children or anything like that I need to worry about offending right now. It was really pretty amazing. So we did get to talk to some of the cast. So I live streamed the whole event on the MuggleNet Facebook page, and we were joined by so many fans who were just as excited as I was there to be there. So I was there with one of our other MuggleNet staff members, Felicia. And we got to, first of all, I kind of, being the person I am, I started asking people if I was allowed on the red carpet, if I could get on there, could I take some selfies there? And then I saw everyone else with the same passes as me just kind of strutting their stuff on there. So I just kind of run through. No one stopped me, so it was all good.
That's good.
And it did look amazing. So they took over this cinema complex, and they created like this walkway and archway, and there were these big velvet curtains that they opened up when the talent started to arrive. And there were so many fans from everywhere as well. Loads of people had kind of done a bit of a pilgrimage to come along, which was amazing. And I think I would have wanted to talk to more cast members, but to see how they interacted with fans was, it just like warmed my heart to see that it meant so much to them. I mean, Ezra, he did maybe one interview, if that, and he spent the rest of the time filming little videos with fans, selfies, just being Ezra, like doing some weird stuff to the camera, and just, he spent his whole time up with the fans. Eddie was literally being dragged away from fans because he didn't want to do, like, he was just so excited. He wanted to talk to people. He wanted to sign stuff. He was doing selfies that he kind of forgot where he was meant to be. and, you know, multiple kind of assistants would arrive and drag him. And I mean, drag him. They had one person behind him and then someone with each hand, like, pulling him away. And he was going, I'll come back. But for me, I actually got to ask Jude Law a question. I was trying so hard to keep my cool. And I managed quite well, considering that although we are rivals, you know, with Leaky and stuff, in the UK, we know each other quite well. And we'd been staying at the same hotel. And I've done other things with one of the Leaky staff members, Emma. And as soon as Jude Law came over, she said, "Hi, I'm Emma from MuggleNet," because she just got so flustered.
<That's> so
it was brilliant. She was like, "Oh, I hope no one heard that." And I was like, "Well, it was caught on our live stream, so yeah."
And we'll take it.
Yeah. But he came over and I kind of asked him how much room he'd had to make the character his own, considering Dumbledore's backstory and knowing that Dumbledore is one of J.K. Rowling's favourite characters. And, you know, he took a minute to kind of process, and then he was like, oh, it's been really wonderful. It's been a gift as an actor to be able to see where I'm starting with this character, but then to see where he ends up in the future. And he kind of said that he'd been working really closely with J.K. Rowling to be able to ask questions, to kind of get it down, and really make Dumbledore into this. I really felt there was a new Dumbledore that we saw, but with the hints mm-hmm. of where he goes. So yeah. When I heard Jude Law say that, I was like, yeah, for sure. And you know, he took his time with each person who was asking him questions, and he was so invested. And the fact that he'd done his research and he really wanted to answer these fan questions. I think he spent more time with fan outlets than he did with other news people, because he really wanted to kind of get down to it and show how he'd taken Dumbledore seriously. And that was huge.
Yeah. And you could tell, because I think Michael was the one that said it on the last episode, but
yeah,
just the way that he kind of really took on some of the mannerisms from the previous two actors who played Dumbledore, like, you could just tell when you watched the movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was lucky that I did get to go and see the film straight afterwards, so I went into one of the screens, and I could really tell he'd done his homework, and I just feel like it's such a nice nod to that, especially considering some of the more iffy timeline issues discussed in the last episode. To see that homework he'd done and the dedication to it just really meant a lot. But we also got to speak to Claudia Kim, who is our Nagini.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so hyped. We asked her how she'd coped with having to keep her character reveal secret for so long, and you know, she pretty much started bouncing up and down as we were talking to her, as she was saying that it meant she knew how important it was, and to know what a reaction she had to being told that was who her character was, she didn't want to take that away from any fans. And you know, to hear us talk so earnestly about it and to understand what this means to the Potter fandom and kind of the new fans coming into it, it was just so great to be able to talk to her and to see how passionate she was. And I'm hopeful that we see a lot more of her in the next films, but this is one character that we know what she ends up being, but we don't know how she gets, like, the journey she goes on before then. But it was really great to actually be there and to be in an audience with people who had been specially invited. We have some of the Lumos people in there. They literally took out a 20 screen cinema, and it was just showing Crimes of Grindelwald. But to sit there and hear everyone's reactions, like, there were just so many squeaks and like gasps, and at the end I yelled "you what" really loudly in a very British accent, and everyone stared at me, but you know,
that's great. James, did you have a good experience at the premiere as well?
Me? Oh, God, I loved it. It's so amazing to spend all the time. I never get invited to those things.
Really?
No, not Why? For the likes of me.
That's no fair.
It's for the leads in the movie. It's not for people who work on the crew where I do.
I don't think I ever knew that. I think I thought that, like, everyone who gets credited in the movie gets to go to the premiere.
No, we have our own screening. So we have a cast and crew screening that generally happen in Leicester Square on 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. But this time, for Crimes of Grindelwald, it happened in at about 2:30. But unfortunately, I was working, so I couldn't go.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
So that's like the real life of, like, an actor. That's how it really is.
I mean, some of the other actors get to go, but, you know, I never get invited. They've got to invite all the people from celebrity dancing competitions, haven't they? that's how it works.
What would we do without the celebrity dance competitions?
I think you should snowball them. Like, as a kind of revenge for this, I think you should get the snow act on them and just be like, well, you're going to have snow at this premiere. Tough luck.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. because it has happened before. I think we did many years ago. We did the premiere for the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movies. Whatever they're called.
Oh yeah.
Those things.
Narnia.
Narnia, if that's what you're into. But it's Harry Potter, isn't it? It's a bit Christian for my liking. So we did the premiere for that. And I think we did it for the Grinch as well many years ago. So we have, you know, we have falling snow and Rhonda under instruction not to get any snow on Jim Carrey or whoever.
Oh, my gosh. Oh yeah. So physics.
Oh, the temptation.
Please alter physics so as not to get any snow on Jim Carrey.
Well, it's just, I mean, yes, but it is just turning the machine off. But yeah, there's not a lot you can do with in terms of how the wind works.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never get to go, or very rarely get to go, and that's fine. I'm not in it for the party.
Makes me unhappy.
Well, sorry.
It's not your fault. But I will write. I'll write a letter to WB on your behalf.
Oh no, don't. They might not employ me again. it's a nice idea, and I'm sure they're wonderful. But you know, I'd rather work, frankly.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think if I were somehow a famous actor, I would be like, please cover me in as much snow as possible. I think that would just be more entertaining.
It is quite fun, you know, because the falling snow is a certain kind of a self-cleaning effect, if you like.
Huh.
So you can, and you can change the size of the flakes on the machines that we use.
Wow.
So they can get pretty big, you know, if we're doing kind of proper snowstorms and whatnot, they can get pretty large, but it's great fun. A lot of people kind of get involved.
That's so cool. I don't know. It's funny that I'm so fascinated by this snow stuff when there's like,
yeah, me too, man.
People listening to this are probably like, can you talk to him about the more interesting stuff? And I'm like, it's the snow.
Well, people don't know. You know, we did Murder on the Orient Express a few years ago, which is a truly atrocious film. Sorry, everybody, but it's just terrible.
Oh, well, I should admit this to you, but I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, you and the rest of the world. but, I mean, you know, aside from that, I mean, that's just my opinion of the film. But obviously, there's an awful lot of snow on that. And, you know, ice effects that we did that you wouldn't know aren't ice. But, of course, it's not. It's a different thing. It's a longer-lasting product.
Huh.
I won't tell you what it is, but it's a longer-lasting product. They can stay there for weeks or months, you know, with a little bit of repair work, as it were. Actually, you know, it's, yes, we are, you know, Snow Business are called Snow Business International, but it's winter effect, as you know, it's probably more coverage than just a bit of snow.
That's awesome.
I didn't start it. I wish I did.
Lizzie, any last thoughts about the premiere?
So there were quite a few actors there, actually, who were quite cagey about what they could say still, which the one person that was really cautious with their answers was William Nadlam, who plays Yusuf Karma.
Love William.
Yeah.
So nice fella.
He did seem really great. Sadly, we didn't get to interview him personally, but he was talking to one of the outlets next to us, and they were kind of trying to press the more harder questions, and he kept just putting his finger to his lips and like doing this cheeky kind of grin, and I was like, oh, what do you know? What do you know?
He knows all the secrets.
Yeah, well, it seems like it from his kind of cheeky smile. So I really hope we get to see a lot more from him. And I did get to meet up with Maria Marjolaine from the BBC Common Room.
Oh,
which
nice.
Was so awesome. So yeah, I got to see them all in their cosplay and come and say hi to them before they went off to their screening. So that was great.
That's awesome.
I'm jealous.
I know. So here's to hoping that we keep getting invited to all the other premieres. That would be exciting. The only other piece of news that I have is much less exciting than premieres and snow. It is the fact that there is now Crimes of Grindelwald merch being sold at Universal. They have Leetah's wand and some journals and stuff like that. So if you're at Universal, you can represent the new movie.
Okay. There's a lot of this stuff as well at the Noble Collection in London. So
okay.
Yeah. If you can't make it over to Orlando or Hollywood, you know, come to London.
I like London better, but it's further away.
I take you up on it. I'm flying over on Wednesday.
I'm jealous.
I'm like, for work. You can't tell me that.
Yeah, because it's for work. I'll be there, but not having time for anything.
What's very exciting for me specifically, no one else cares, but they're starting direct flights from Pittsburgh to Heathrow in April, and I'm just stoked about it. At last,
I'm going to Pittsburgh.
You all. Yes, James and Lizzie, you guys have to come to Pittsburgh now. It's everyone's favorite destination.
Well, that's, you know, it's you know, we all mock where we come from because you go, oh, I'm from so-and-so in so-and-so. And if you live there, it's terribly dull. But of course, if you don't, it's somewhere new and exciting.
This is true.
So for me, I'd go, I'd like to go to Pittsburgh.
Well, if you do, let me know. I'll show you around. It'll be fun. We'll eat sandwiches that have French fries on them.
I am sold.
Yeah, I'm going to come over now.
Please do.
Seriously, when? When? Let's arrange this now. Should we? I'll book flights.
Anytime, starting in April, those flights are direct. They'll bring you right over.
Okay, great. 1st of April.
Perfect.
I hear owls coming.
Hey. So I think it's time for Owlpost. So I've been informed that we've got quite a few exhausted owls and they're going to need to recover for a little bit. So we're going to be covering a couple of questions, a couple of them that came in, but we are saving a few of these super interesting and long responses to last week's episode in a later podcast so that we can really kind of dedicate more time to discussing them and give them the time they deserve.
Yes. If you answered last episode's podcast question, we're not ignoring you. We will be addressing those responses, just not today.
So first up, we have a post. Wow, that's going weird. So our first owl post is from Alexander Fiskin and Accio Gelato. Oh, God, that's going to make me want ice cream now. Who say... Surely the McGonagall in the film is Minerva's mother rather than actual Minerva. Well, you know what? I really want it to be that way. But sadly, it actually says, well, it's been confirmed on the IMDb page of the film that her name is Minerva. So it kind of ruins that theory because her mother's name is Isabel, which Hayley has informed us of. I still... Yeah,
also, her
I still
mother's have name wasn't McGonagall before marriage.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the whole marriage issue.
Mm.
I know that you know, in the last episode, Michael, Shannon and Oreo yourself kind of talked about this. And yeah, I kind of just want to black it out. Like it didn't happen. Like it wasn't there. Nope, gone. Poof.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we as fans love to try to find ways to sort of fit everything together, especially with these timeline discrepancies that we're noticing. But I think in this case, it's just... There's something either time travel or some other nonsense involved to explain that.
And you know what? Fiona was so good.
Yeah, she was.
There's a time discrepancy. I don't care. She was so good. I'd watch her all day.
That is a fair point.
Can we just have her as a different character?
Yeah.
I'm just assuming that they're like splitting between like movie canon and book canon. So.
Yeah, I did love the part where what's-her-face, the tattletale girl, was like, Professor McGonagall, she's terrible, she's the worst, and then she just, like, takes her mouth off again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even as a Gryffindor, I was like, yeah, please.
Yeah.
Definitely irritating.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It was fun.
So,
it was fun.
Oh, sorry, James.
It was fun. I was just saying, it was fun to shoot that stuff.
Did you get to be involved in the flashback scenes?
Yeah, I was there every day.
Oh, that's awesome.
I started in, when did I start? I think I did my first day before we started shooting on the beginning of March last year, would it be?
Yeah.
And then I did my final bit of work on it over the summer this year.
Wow.
So, yeah. And, you know, it's a long, long process. I think people are not often aware of how long these things take.
Yeah.
From, you know, not including the whole Joe writing the script, all that stuff, but just the simple thing of, you know, making sure we've got everybody that we need in the cast to actually shooting the thing. You know, editing as you go, if you like, seeing what you need, and then coming back and adding things or taking things away, doing whatever it may be. So, you know, it's a strong 18 months at the very least.
Yeah.
To get things ready for public consumption.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think the film speaks for itself.
Definitely. There was obviously like a ton that went into it. And that's awesome that you got to be there for the going back to Hogwarts scenes, which I don't know. We were all excited about.
No, we loved it. We were down in Laycock in Bath.
Yes.
That's where I'm in Bath right now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
They are. So we went down there for a week or so, I think it was, last September time, and shot the Hogwarts bit, the flashback stuff, and obviously when Ace and a couple of characters go to Hogwarts, mm-hmm. in the present day as it was then. Although we all thought it would be hilarious to call Laycock Lecoq. because we're all 12 years old.
Yeah.
There's someone on this podcast who was adamant that it was pronounced Lecoq until I came on, and I was like, no, that's right by where I live. It's Laycock.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you just saw an opportunity. You have to take it.
Yes.
Where are we going? Lecoq. Okay, cool. It's the infantile.
Yeah, whether or not it wants to admit it, I think that's what its name is.
I agree.
I mean, I'm sure you probably saw a plaque up there. I took Megan when she came to visit to Laycock. I think maybe it's happened. There must be a plaque there that you saw.
There must be.
It is now.
It's such a long time ago. Yeah, I mean, it's great. I think it's, you know, because I know obviously Hogwarts is shot over a multitude of places over the years. But yeah, Laycock has such a special feel to it about how it looks and how it feels there, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, such an ancient place. But it's a lovely place to work.
Yeah,
and not stuck in an office in somewhere.
That's a very cool place to visit, too, if you ever find yourself in Lecoq, the abbey out there.
Oh, more times than I remember, love. Really, you can't say that. That's outrageous. well, we did. You know, we had a bit of time. We had a bit of time to have a walk around the grounds and whatnot. There's a secondhand bookshop there as well. It's very good. I highly recommend going if you're that way.
Yes, but you have to get off a train in some place and then take a bus, and you need Lizzie there to show you how to do it. Otherwise, you'll get lost.
Well, there is that. We drive.
Yes. I drive on the other side of the road, so I was a little bit reluctant to try.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that here, really.
Yeah.
There's laws and stuff. I mean, I wouldn't worry about it too much. You know, they get sometimes the they get funny about following the rules.
Yeah, traffic laws. They get so uptight about those.
Right. You know, sometimes you just gotta let it go. Pick your battles, man. You know what I mean?
Right.
bigger fish to fry. Sorry, I interrupted. Carry on. I'll sit here and I'll be good now.
No,
we like the interruptions, definitely.
Yes, please.
Well, in that case, let me tell you about. No, I'm kidding. no, good. Carry on. It's your show. Go on.
All right. Well, our second owl is from Raven Claire, who says, "Thanks for the perfectly timed episode, guys. This appeared in my podcast app just as I was getting out of the processing stage and needed to start unpicking the movie." Oh, yeah, we've been there. Totally. firstly, I want to say that Credence's name seems like a classic JKR naming move. It almost but didn't quite fit with Modesty and Chastity's name in the first film, borrowing from the Puritan naming convention. Credence, meaning a belief in something is true. Oh, I didn't know that. Sorry. was undermined in the first movie, as everything he had been taught by his adoptive mother was undermined. Now, in the second film, it takes on a new meaning. Credence, and we believed in the Lestrange red herring as the truth. It's almost as if JKR called him gullible. Oh, harsh. As in the did you know gullible has been taken out of the dictionary joke. I wonder where Credence's journey of what to believe as true will take him next.
Me too.
It's one of those ones.
I mean, we're probably going to have like an episode just dedicated to this whole topic.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. Because, you know, it's the big topic. But
that big thing that happens.
Yeah, that like the movie ends on.
I think I missed that. I think I got up early to be all
Yeah, okay.
got some news for you then.
But I really like what Ravenclaw pointed out here with what Credence means, and that it doesn't fit in with Modesty and Chastity. And I mean, we know JKR is always playing games with us that way. So I'm really down to that.
Yeah.
I suppose it must. I don't know what the root word for credence would be, but I imagine it's along the lines of credibility and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would imagine, but I don't know if credence is the root word for that, or if there's another earlier root or whatever. But yeah, it's I love what she does. How she takes you one way and then pulls you another way.
And, you know, we wouldn't have a podcast if you didn't keep dropping all these crumbs, so...
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And people love kind of picking over them and coming up with their own ideas of what they think is happening. And you know, having... I read the script, you know, last year, so I knew what the big reveal was. Course, you know we have all known for well over a year. So, you know, talk about protecting the secrets. Yeah, yeah, still really. Protecting that secret. Yep.
That must have been hard. But it's...
not in my real life as such.
Okay.
Because people say, oh, do you know what's going to happen? And you go, yeah. And they go, and of course, you know, from the script to what we shoot to what they put in the movie, that might be completely different. But if, you know, if it follows the path of the script that we read, then yes, I absolutely do know what happens. But what I never understand about not protecting the secrets almost is why would you want to spoil your own enjoyment of the movie,
right?
Or anybody else's. You know, everybody likes a little guess, and that's all fine about what this could be and what that could be. And of course, we see stuff when we're on set, and they go, oh yeah, that person got it right. Oh, they don't know. They're way off. So that, you know, that's quite fun for us when we're making the movie, when we hear people guessing.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, I know there are some people who think it's hilarious to have spoilers out there. But you know, for me, I go, well, you know, all will be revealed in the fullness of time. As much fun as it is to guess,
yeah.
Most people get it wrong. But that said, it's an interesting journey that they go on to get it wrong. You know, even so, I think it's a worthwhile journey to just as a creative journey, because no doubt Jo went there herself before she decided to flip.
I mean, we always have the 2 years break where we go theorize about everything and anything, and then. We get to see the movie and then we're like, start fresh with new theories.
Yeah.
It's a never ending thing, because you know, it's all it's going to be is guesswork, or you know, adding 2 plus 2 plus 5 and getting 9. Let me just make sure that isn't 9.
Right.
Yeah, that's 7. Okay. Yeah. That's my high. Go on.
I'm sorry. I just think a lot of that is sort of left over from the days of the Harry Potter books, and between books, you know, all the fans were always trying to put the clues together, and I think a lot of people are just trying to enjoy doing that here as well, even though it might not necessarily work the same way that it did before. So like, there are some people who I think probably get some things right, but then other people who are just like looking for anything to possibly theorize about, and you're like, well, that might be a little crazy, but you never know.
I mean, I'm definitely loving, because I work on creative team, so I don't think I got sleep for like a week after the film was released, because so many of our editorials just had these amazing theories, they wanted to write stuff, and you know, it was so great. Like, I think we broke our server on the site because it was getting so much traffic, and it's definitely one of those things that I think that we don't want to let go. And you're right, we have 2 years to keep going with this, and we really are going to keep going with this, like, don't worry. But I think it's a huge testament to the cast and the crew that everyone has that attitude. You didn't want to spoil it, you know, it was a bit of fun for you guys to try and guess and see what was going on as well, and I think that's a huge testament to the whole kind of production and experience of the film for everyone.
I can honestly say, in all my years of doing films and shows and stuff, being part of the Wizarding World is absolute privilege. Not just for the simple fact of the movies that we're making that will, you know, outlive most of us, but very much the idea of how much it means to people, and also what a wonderful experience it is literally making the film itself. How everybody wants to be there, how, you know, we've all known each other for years, and it's there's a shorthand that makes work very easy.
Yeah.
And good ideas come from the person who's been doing it 80 years, and good ideas come from the person who's been doing it for a week. And that's a wonderful, wonderful kind of collaborative thing to be a part of. The people I'm sure would kill to be, you know, will take my right arm to swap places with me. But I've been fortunate, so I will fight you. But it's great. And what I think what is wonderful is, you know, because obviously everybody knows that we're doing, you know, that there are going to be 5 of these Fantastic Beasts movies, and we know the path that it's taking because of, you know, what's canon already, and of course what we already know happens in, you know, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s with Grindelwald. But nothing is so spoon-fed as it often is in films these days. But people will find out as the characters do, rather than, you know, having literally the Austin Powers Basil exposition character come in and say, "Hey guys, this is what's going on." But you know, there has to be a bit of that, but it works best when it's done through suspense rather than dialogue. You have to have a bit of both sometimes, and that's fine. But what I enjoy is that it isn't, none of it's spoon fed, none of it's, you know, people are coming out with questions and having to go back and see the film again. I think it's a really, it's a sign of a really strong film that people feel they need to go and watch it again.
That's true.
For the bits they think they've missed, rather than it being a film going, "Oh look, here's a character to," it's, you know, it's what it is. It's your sister coming in and saying, "Hello, brother. How are you? Do you remember that experience that we both had, that we both know about, that I'm then now going to tell you about, brother?" It's that lazy kind of exposition, because it's a nod to the audience. Say, "Okay, everybody up to speed so far?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Right. Moving on to the next scene." So I think that's one of the things that's great about these movies, that it isn't all spoon fed to you, so you can watch it once and go, "Okay, great, I know what happens."
Yeah, that's definitely not the case with this movie.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. There are things to discover, and of course we're looking at this the second movie as, you know, two of five.
Mm-hmm.
So they all work as one. You know, essentially they'd all work like the Harry Potters. They'd all work as one continuous journey, which I think is a fascinating thing, because, you know, we're all getting older with these characters, and I just think it's an amazing thing to be part of. And of course, they're all original screenplays. You know, the Fantastic Beasts movies are, they're not from the books. They're written for the screen. So, you know, it's not a remake of a cartoon. I'm trying to be careful and not say names of studios, or it's not a rehash of a film that was made in the 70s. Oh wow, careful, James. these are original screenplays. Yes, it's in a world that we know, or we think we know,
right?
But you know, it's you know, they're separate from Harry Potter.
Yes.
Of course, we still have characters that cross over, and that's why it's a wizarding universe. You know, this wizarding world that we have is you can go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I think, is the wonderful thing. So did I interrupt? I'm terrible. I know.
No.
Gosh.
No, not at all.
The guest has privileges of doing that. You're fine. Yes.
Right, can I get a coffee, please? Black coffee, just black, please.
Might Jesus. Be a bit cold just by the time black. It gets to you, but sure.
Yeah.
I'm so not demanding, generally, until I am. No, sorry. Next, what's the next one? What's the next owl one? Yeah.
Okay, we have one final owl from Sarah. Oh, gosh. Sorry, you might. Cheddar.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'll let the
Sarah.
Germans
I'm
say really it. Didn't
mean to put yeah. I was just going to be like, let's see how you're going to go pronounce it.
She's testing us. That's
okay. So she says, "I have this theory on the skull, more so a few theories, and who it belongs to." And I'm going to admit right here, this is me. I actually hadn't questioned where this skull was from, so I'm really intrigued by this now. First and foremost, the name that came to mind was Ariana. Details on the whole duel are vague and foggy at best. This was easily discredited by actually going back and looking at the year of the skull, 1898. Ariana died a year earlier. Unless JKR retcons this as she...
JK reckons that she, as she's wont to do, as in terms of, as is her habit or her choice to do that, to do with bits of Fantastic Beasts. The next is the skull is a relative of we haven't heard of. Okay, so she's saying it could be a relative that we don't know about.
Another one.
But then she goes on to say this might be unlikely. So excellent, well thought through, stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's also possible the skull belongs to an unnamed obscurial. I mean, yes, it's possible. It's possible the Grindelwald bore witness to Ariana's powers being unleashed at the time of her death and wanted to use it. Also possible.
So is she saying that this skull hookah is like a real skull? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
That's what she's saying. She's saying it's this belong to a person, and she's saying it belonged to a person, but we don't know who. So here are some people it might be. You're going, yep, it could be those, or it could be somebody else.
Really?
My thoughts are that.
I mean, I guess it does look like a real skull.
Why did you guys think it was an artificial skull? Because I never thought it was artificial.
I just assumed. I didn't think he was smoking out of a real skull.
Well, I just didn't really
having,
question
having where... smoked out of it myself.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Actually,
a professional. Well, you know, well, theoretically, but having at least pretended to, I can neither confirm nor deny whether it's a real skull.
Okay.
Because why would I? I really like my job.
That's fair.
And also, you know, it's essentially for the greater good, isn't it?
Ooh.
You know, your anger, your desire for revenge is natural. It is inevitable, as they say. But yes. What was the question? Good. Is it? Could be. Don't know. Might be. Might not be.
I think the main question is if it's Ariana's skull.
Well, don't know. Might be.
I mean, I like Sarah's comment that she says it's more believable and more poetic that inner writer in me loves it, while the fan in me is screaming why. And my brain is currently screaming why. I mean, just think of one image that Grindelwald then has to go and dig up Ariana's grave and decapitate her. I just don't see, like, I mean, he's brutal, but it's a bit too hands dirty for him.
Who says he wasn't?
Did I just take that to a really dark place?
No, yeah, I mean, you're right. But you're
who
right.
Who says he did it himself?
Well,
he could easily order someone else to do it.
I
mean, surely Dumbledore could. Sorry, carry on, James.
No, but Joe, talk about Dumbledore. I'd like to hear what you think there.
I kind of like to think that he would have at least protected her grave and...
Yeah, but that makes sense. I think that's a good thing to think. I think that's a...
I feel like you know more on this right now, James.
or do I? Or am I just... I don't know. There's stuff that I know. There's, you know, you talk about
the
darkness
stuff you know,
of the film.
The stuff you don't know.
Yeah, and there's stuff that I know that I don't know. But there's, you know, talking of the darkness, and, you know, make no mistake, some of this film is incredibly dark.
Yeah.
You know, with kind of casual murder.
Right.
You know, and just through, and not just casual murder of grown-ups either. But it's what makes it all the more chilling, I think, is that it is just so casual that it happens. But I think what's wonderful in the writing and the directing by David is that it's not dwelt upon. It's gone, that happened. But of course, you know, as an audience member, you're going, what? But how did she just... but I think that's what makes it all the more chilling, that there's no... It's, if this makes sense, it's almost done without malice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're in my way. I have to kill you. You're dead. Okay, bye.
Right.
You're just a thing, a muggle, a nomad, whatever it may be. You're just in the way. You know, the end. Get out of the way. You're dead. And that's far more chilling than you know, someone who's going to monologue about why they're going to kill you and, you know, in turn give you time.
Voldemort.
No comment. I think that's what makes it incredibly dark, and also which is I think current right now with the kind of the perceived rise of the right wing, that people say, well, you know, well, what he's saying is perfectly reasonable, isn't it?
We should be
in charge, because, you know, we're different,
right?
We're special. And that's chilling, that, you know, that's kind of almost to a certain degree mirroring the society in which we live, that people are coming out and saying these kind of almost outrageous, well, not almost, actually outrageous things about people of different sexes or genders or races or political opinion or whatever it may be, and saying something, you know, first and foremost ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And people going, oh yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah,
it's like the critical faculties have been switched off.
Mm-hmm.
History keeps repeating itself.
Exactly, yeah. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, I think you know, during the Second World War, Churchill predicted something was going to happen. And I believe, old school actor story, David Niven was there. And after this thing had happened, Niven said to Churchill, how did you know? He said, because I study history, dear boy.
because that was a really
as you
good
say, excellent, that was my David Diven. But I think you're absolutely right that history repeats itself, as we are seeing at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think you picked up on, you kind of said that people listen to what they want. And I think that's exactly what's happened with Queenie. She's blacked out all the other stuff. It's like those things don't matter because they're not on her kind of spectrum of understanding in her life right now. So she's very prepared to look at only one way and how it's going to affect her in that sense. And I think that's something that it's the things that aren't being said that are the most powerful in this.
That's a very wise thing to say. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. She's, you know, Queenie is desperate. She's, you know, her and Jacob have this incredibly wonderful relationship, this incredibly strong relationship. And that's testament again to the writing and testament to the directing and of course testament to Dan and Alison as actors who bring them to life that you feel for them. You know, such wonderful, wonderful performances and they're desperate to be together. And as you say, Queen is just kind of, how can I do this? And she's kind of blinkered.
Mm.
It's a form of desperation. Well, it is desperation, I think. How can I make this happen? How can I make this happen? I'll do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's powerful, but also heartbreaking.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of heartbreak in the second movie.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I said I wouldn't cry.
Oh, can I quickly go back to the artificial skull? Sorry. Because I also think there's a bit of a cultural, if you want to say cultural, difference between muggles and wizards. Because, you know, like, if you look at what happens in potion class, like, I'm surprised not everyone is a vegetarian at Hogwarts, because what they have to do, like, I'd be not willing to do it. So I don't think, you know, like, with alchemy and potions and stuff, that wizards are, like, that would take that much of an issue to take a real skull.
Did you not have to dissect stuff in science?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I had to dissect a frog once.
Yes.
And a fish.
And we had to do some lungs. Like, I can't remember what I was.
If you did
lungs or something.
Yeah. If you did more advanced science classes, you had to dissect like a sheep fetus or something. But I was not a science kid, so I didn't go that far.
But even then, like, you guys did it once and not at age 11.
True.
Yeah.
I never got to do that.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I went to school in the 1890s. When was I at school? I was in the school in the 80s, so the schools didn't have any money then. For things. Maybe other schools. Maybe I just missed out. Oh, my God, I'm having a revelation. I missed out on my entire education.
You could have been a biologist.
Entire education has been I did do a degree in history and philosophy of science at university. Forget, I didn't really go, frankly. That's for another day, that story. Anyway, hey, also another good point regarding skulls and how the perception of all that business.
Yeah.
Well done, everybody. Good work. Take the rest of the day off.
Because, like, also if you, like, look at, you know, non-religion that is not, like, Christianity or something, like, nature-based religions, like, I don't know, Hawaiian religion or something like that, they've run around with, like, pieces of bones of people they killed. Mm. And no one came with them.
And in Mexico.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Yeah, and the voodoo stuff, and I suppose probably paganism as well. There's probably a lot of examples there.
Yeah. So it's really just, you know, how you like, raise, how you grow up with it.
And also, well, I looked up a picture of it while we were talking about it, because I was like, was it a real skull? And it is. But it's got, like, a very distinct hole in the top of it, like somebody was shot through the head. And I don't know if that's just, like, wear and tear from people smoking out of it, or if that's an indication of how this person was killed.
Did you ever think you'd get to a point in your life where you said, you know, maybe it was just wear and tear, the hole in the skull from where people have been smoking out of it?
No, that's a new one for me.
I think, you know, this is kind of that's the peak, isn't it? You've peaked.
Yes.
What did you do right today, darling? Well...
Yeah. So in conclusion, the skull is real, but we don't know who it belongs to.
If you say so. That's okay. How you see it.
James knows who it belongs to.
I don't know.
Neither confirm nor deny.
I don't know, do I?
Protect the secrets.
Hashtag James is making up. He hasn't got a clue. No idea.
James is good at his job, and he won't tell us what it is.
I just really like working. and I'd like to be asked back, you know.
I think that's fair. So does that mean that you already have the script for the next movie?
No, gosh, no. No. Okay. Absolutely not. That doesn't happen for until we're on board.
Okay.
Until we're safely on board. It's not as though that you get given a script, a hard copy of a script. It's all safe, and there's no chance of it leaking in that regard.
Mm, I see.
Or at least that and there's nothing we can do with it. We just have a version of it that is ours for the duration, if you like.
Okay.
But it's not something we get to keep, or something we can share, or something we can do anything other than read.
Well, I was assuming you were going to read it to us, but unfortunately, I guess that's going to happen.
Once upon a time.
I like it already.
Yeah, so that's a strong start.
A plus.
Hey.
So, I think our owls are flying away.
Bye, owls.
See you next week. And with that, we shall move
into... Caw! That's a different bird.
We shall move into our main discussion, where we make James talk some more.
Oh, God. Sorry, everybody.
I have a maybe very stupid question, but like, as someone who's not that invested in the film industry, what exactly is a stand-in? Can you explain that a little more?
That's a good question. And after 20 odd years in the business, I still don't know. but I do. This is actually a thing that I know about. So a stand-in is somebody who... So for something like Sherlock Holmes, so I was Robert Downey Jr. stand-in on those two movies. Because I'm about the same height, which is kind of the key thing, the same kind of skin tone, similar build, if you like.
Hmm.
So what would happen is that they would do the lighting and the camera moves around me while Robert is getting ready, while he's in the chair, so he's getting hair and makeup done and his costume done and all that kind of stuff. And for him to be standing around on set, just making sure every little bit is right, it's quite a tiring process. So we have people to cover them for that, hence a stand-in. So we do the move, sometimes we do the dialogue, for timing, and if anything should change from the rehearsal, then depending on the movie or depending on the actor that you're working with, you'll let them know any changes, and then we'll kind of give it a rehearsal on camera with them, and then if we're happy, we'll shoot. So it's essentially you're there for the director of photography to light around and for the operator to work out the camera moves based on instructions.
So do you get to wear all the fancy costumes?
No. I mean, it, depending on what the DOP wants, we try and match colours to what they're wearing. Philippe Rousselot, who was the DOP on two Sherlock Holmes movies and on both Fantastic Beasts movies and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, so he's a chap that I've known for a very long time, Oscar-winning director of photography, lovely, delightful man. He always says, "Oh no, I don't need colours. Ugh, no," because he can light a brick and make it look like Audrey Hepburn. Because he's wonderful at his job, and he doesn't need. He's been doing it so long. He's just got an eye for what looks good.
Okay.
But for other things, it means we might be involved in rehearsal. We work as cast readers as well, so we do off lines for the actors. If we don't have certain actors that day, then we'll cover their dialogue to whoever the other actor is on camera. It's a job that people don't really know about, because there's no particular reason they would know about it. Well, we often confuse it with being a double, whereas doubles are generally people who are exactly the same build, exactly the same height, more or less same coloring, but of course you never see their face as such. It's a back of a head, or it's a hand, or it's a whatever it may be. So yeah, it's a job that people aren't terribly familiar with, but it's an incredibly important job. It's an incredibly time-consuming job, because you're there from first thing in the morning till last time, to when you wrap in the evening. And so you're paying attention all day. Essentially, it's when you watch a television program, you might not necessarily watching to go what they do and how they do it and which hand they pick up the the blast with, and you know, at what point they pause for the dialogue and pick and take a bite of a sandwich. We're just watching what's happening, whereas we're watching the minutiae of what is going on to match it, to copy it. So when the actor comes back, we're ready to shoot. Yeah, it's you know, it's a job that I love doing, and there aren't many of us that do it to the level that we do it. There are maybe, at a push, I'd say 10. Dare I use that awful term? 10 professional stand-ins in the country that I would personally recommend. There are plenty of people who've done it a few times. There's plenty of people who say, "Oh yeah, I've done a bit of that. It's easy, isn't it?" To which I reply, "Not if you're doing it properly, love." So you know, I've been doing it a long time, so I know the value of it. You know, a good stand-in is going to save you time, it's going to save you money, and it's going to make your production run smoother. But that's there are not many cool. people. Yeah, there are just not many people that do it because people don't know it exists, and a lot of people can't seem to grasp what it is. Mm-hmm. Essentially, this is your actor, this is who you watch, and you copy them. It's amazing how many people can't grasp that. Simple concept. But it isn't about you, it's about the person you're covering, the person you're looking after.
I mean, it's a bit like Inception, isn't it? Like, there is an actor playing a role, and then there is the stand-in who's playing the actor who's playing a role.
There's certainly levels of that, you know. So yeah, and you find yourself, if you work with an actor over a long period of time or a few times, you kind of start getting their physicality, how they move. So that makes it easier to do, because you kind of get a heads up of something they're more likely to do, you know. And it helps the focus puller, it helps the script supervisor, it helps all of the various departments make sure that we're ready for when the artists turn up to do their thing. But yeah, it's a job that people don't particularly know about, which is fine. I don't mind that. Less competition that way.
That sounds like a fun but taxing job.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm in no way complaining, but it is, you know, it's tiring, you know. But in whatever you do in film, you have to be prepared, you know, while actually shooting the movie for 6 months or whatever, that's what you're doing. You don't have a great deal of time for a social life. This becomes this bubble in which you live for that period becomes the center of your day-to-day life. And people, you know, some people can't maintain the level of energy that you need to work to that level. You know, if you consider that, you know, we do on a movie, we're going to do a very basic of 50 hours a week, a very basic.
Wow.
And that can, you know, run almost twice as long on occasion.
Crazy.
So, you know, you have to be able to manage your time, you know, and your sleep and your hours just to, you know, you can't spend all night playing video games.
Yeah.
But, you know, that has to be something you do when you finish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same for anybody in film, from, you know, the person who's in the background 500 yards away to the producers, to whoever it may be. You know, you have to be able to maintain a consistent level of performance over however long it takes to make that particular movie. You know, people think it's all kind of glamour and show business and, you know, hanging out with Johnny Depp or Jude Law or whatever. But, you know, it's we're there to work, and everybody is employed by the studio, and everybody is doing their job to make the film the best it can be. And if everybody is then working to that end, then you've got more of a chance of your final piece being a thing that people want to go and see.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Thanks. I just turn up on time and I keep smiling.
That's hard some days. I get to do that at my job.
So. That's it. Yeah, it's not hard to do that when you're working on something like Beasts.
That's fair. So you worked on the Harry Potter films and also on Fantastic Beasts.
I did 20 Seconds in Order of the Phoenix.
Are there any like major differences between the two in terms of filming, or is it pretty much like a similar setup?
The films are pretty much all the same.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, if you're making a film with students to making a $200 million movie, you know, one of the biggest studios in Europe, it's all the same. You've got people standing in front of the camera, so you're standing behind the camera. It's really just levels of how much stuff you have and how many people there are. But essentially it's the same. You know, you're all working towards the same end. It's just you've got more on the big stuff. You've got more toys. There are more people. You've got, you know, there's more money involved. You know, yeah. If you're doing something with one person and a camera, then it's just on a, it's all, you know, it's all to do with scale, really.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the same, but they're all different. They're all the same. That's confusing, isn't it? Yeah, essentially, there's different, you know, there's differences in personnel, of course, and there's differences in the type of film that you're shooting, you know, be it, you know, kind of a film that's predominantly Steadicam based or crane or you know, super techno crane based or on a tripod or handheld or whatever it may be. So there's different styles in terms of filmmaking, but it's all, you know, essentially when it comes down to it, you've got an actor in front of the camera and somebody operating the camera.
Yeah.
And the rest is just stuff. But stuff that you need.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make a $200 million movie at £20. There's a reason film costs so much.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the sheer level of employment that it provides, the sheer volume of work hours that it provides for people, you know, because it's not just about the people on set, on the floor, who are cobbling together the pieces that the editor's going to need. It's all the people who've worked in prep, all the people in the offices who work in production, the payroll staff, the people, the construction people who build the sets that we shoot on, all of these sort of things. A big budget film, you know, is going to have thousands of people who've been involved in that process. And that's what you need. You know, Hollywood have been making these sort of movies for, you know, for 100 years. They know what they're doing. You can make great things for not very much money, but to get the scale of things that and the fantasy element of the things that we do, you've got to have a little bit of cash behind you.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Cheap. Yeah, just a couple of quid, you know. It doesn't come cheap, but of course the you know, the rewards are amazing, really, that people still want to go and see and still want to talk about the films that we made, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, we're pretty interested in talking about them.
Well, that's good, isn't it? I'm a big fan. I've been I did Order of the Phoenix. Well, I started as an actor in 1997, I think. I did Order of the Phoenix in 2006. It came out in 2007, and I'm busier now talking about Potter or Captain America or the Beast movies and, you know, my career to date than I was when the film came out, because people still want to hear, people still want to know. You know, it's great. I love talking about it. I'm in a hugely privileged position to have been a jobbing actor who got lucky a couple of times. That's the reality of it. There are plenty of actors that I know who are infinitely more talented than I am, that the world hasn't discovered. the world has discovered me, especially. But, you know, I've managed to kind of carve out a little niche for myself in the film industry. Means I get to work quite a lot without having to, order, you know, serve coffee or whatever it may be, which are noble professions in themselves. no actor wants to be doing that, really.
Yeah.
Of course. What was the question?
Just if there were differences between working on like Potter and Beasts, but I think
I mean, because I did my Potter with David, obviously, you know, Beasts is with David as well, so and I did Tarzan with David as, you know, so this is my Grindelwald is my fourth picture with David.
Wow.
Who's just the most delightful man could hope to have in charge of such a thing.
That's good.
You know, the atmosphere on a set comes from the top. So it comes from David. It comes from David Heyman. It comes from Tim Lewis. It comes from the producers, and it comes from Jo herself. It's a pleasurable, collaborative atmosphere. It's great fun. Great
it
fun.
It looks like fun.
So you said about J.K. Rowling and things. So how often did you get to kind of see her on set, or was it something that, you know, happened and you kind of heard about, or?
She's a busy woman. So.
Oh yes.
You know, fingers in lots of pies and all that kind of stuff. So she comes down when she can. But obviously, you know, I'm sure Jo appreciates that. I think she probably has an awareness that she doesn't want to step on anybody's toes in terms of making the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm sure we'd all be delighted to have her there all the time, frankly. So yeah, we always know when she's coming, and it's always lovely to have her, because, you know, we're all there because of her, because she's an incredible human being.
I think we all, yeah, she's up there for all of us.
You know, what this world that she's created means to people, man, what a thing to be able to say that this incredible world that has helped people through the toughest times in their lives, that has that has made them be brave, that has made them happy, sad, you know, whatever emotion you care to think of. And, you know, overall being a hugely positive, have a huge, hugely positive effect on people's lives. That's an incredible thing for her to have done. And it's an incredible thing to be part of as well, you know, because the people who grew up watching Harry Potter now are now helping make the films, helping make these films, which is lovely.
Podcasts.
Well, yeah, yes, exactly. But, you know, this is a hugely inspiring thing. It's a hugely important thing, you know, because we're all, you know, it all comes back to learning about a small orphan boy whose bedroom was in a cupboard under the stairs, which people can relate to. You know, everybody who watched Harry Potter knows which, you know, you guys know which character you are in Harry Potter, don't you?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know who you relate to, and that's why it still works. That's why people still talk about it, because we all went on that journey through the books and through the films, and that's why it resonates still to this day and will continue to resonate. I think, so. Yeah, it's what a thing to have created. Man, amazing. Who would have thought?
So for you, you know, who has worked on both Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts, but also you've worked on you know, the MCU stuff, the Marvel films.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there, like, a main difference, or is it very similar to work on, like, two, like, franchises that are, like, similarly big and, like, similarly engaged with audiences?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Marvel stuff is that, you know, it's predominantly Americans behind, you know, the top. Whereas with East, it's predominantly the British. You know, so there, obviously there is a difference because they speak differently. but, you know, there's certainly a cultural difference. But as I said before, you know, the process of filmmaking remains the same in terms of, you know, you've got to at some point put actors in front of a camera and shoot them. Not shoot them, but shoot them with a camera. Can't just go around shooting actors. Although, having said that, there are a couple that I won't mention.
I was going to say, are there some that you love working with and some that you hate working with? I guess it's that way with anything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Fantastic Beasts, we're very, very fortunate because the actors in it are just fabulous. And because now we're all on our second picture together for some of us. So for Flight, Eddie is just, what a lovely, hardworking man he is. And, you know, and Dan and Alison and all the others, it's, you know, it's a shorthand because you see each other every, you know, probably every year. Mm-hmm. You spend an extended period of time together every 2 years. So it's just like going, oh, hey, it's just like seeing anybody else you work with on a regular basis, anyone in the crew or David or whoever it may be. And then, you know, when we had Jude come in for Dumbledore, it was great because, you know, I worked with Jude on the Sherlock Holmes movie and The Holiday as well. So, you know, Jude was somebody I knew, not, you know, he's not my friend, but I'm not there to be his friend any more than I'm there to be the gaffer's friend or the best boy's friend. You know, mm-hmm. I consider them friends, of course, but I'm a known entity to them and they're a known entity to me. So it's very easy to work together.
But you don't invite them to your birthday party.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, people say, oh, God, you must know Johnny Depp or you must know Jude Law. And you go, well, I know them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know them like I know lots of people. As in, we could say hello on the street and how are the kids? Yeah, great. How are yours?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm there to work. And it just so happens that you can't do, you know, three or four pictures with someone and not get to know them a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't go around to people's houses for Christmas. I think that's what people get confused about, Mike, with the standing in stuff. They think that you're best friends with the actors. And you go, well, if that's why you're going into doing the job that I do, then that's probably the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Yes, you get to talk to them, but it's the same. It's exactly the same as you go and talk to an electrician or a grip or whoever. They are people that you work with. So you do talk to them and you treat them like human beings, like you treat anybody else. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, we're all employees of the studio.
Yeah.
We're all there to do our job.
Everyone has with their work colleagues. You probably, like, you work with them daily, but you're probably not best friends with them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there are people that I work with on the Fantastic Beasts Fantastic Beasts movies that I am best friends with.
You've got your work wife, haven't you? You know.
I do. The woman that stands in for Queenie and some of the others, Amy Irvin, I've known since, gosh, Vanity Fair back in 2003, that Reese Witherspoon movie.
Hmm.
That was where we first met, and we kind of never stopped talking to each other since. So, you know, she's one of my best friends in the wild through film. And the same with Imogen Lever, who looked after Catherine Waterston. So on both the Beast Movers. These people become your friends. Mm-hmm. You know, we see each other outside of work, and we, you know, we go for coffee with the second unit director of Beasts, or, you know, potter about Soho or whatever it may be, because there's an alumni of people who worked on those movies who were just looking forward to doing the next one. Now, that's what we all talk about. When's the next one? What are we doing? Oh, we're doing it. Can somebody call us, please? So we certainly hope so. You know, it's a wonderful thing to be involved with. As soon as we finish, you kind of, okay, when are we doing the next one? Are we doing the next one? Get somebody to call me.
Well, that's good. That's not always how I feel when I come home from work, but...
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, we all have our good days and our bad days, but there are infinitely more good days than bad days in those pictures.
That's always what you want.
Yes, exactly. Did I get away from the question slightly? I do that, don't I?
No, we like that. That's the best way.
I can't be trusted.
Do you have any specifically interesting stories from set? Anything like unusual that happened
that you're allowed to say?
That you're allowed to talk about?
Everything went smoothly on every film I've ever been in. Nothing untoward happens, but I'll tell you what's interesting is that you do sometimes things get reported in the press of a thing that happened on set of whatever movie you happen to be doing, and they sort of get it right, but mostly it's wrong.
Okay.
I remember we did a movie years ago, a Ridley Scott movie, and a story came out about money being given to someone in the crew by one of the actors, an act of generosity, essentially. But it happened months after the event. It was reported in the press that it just happened, but it happened months prior to that. And of course, the way it happened was completely different. So what gets reported in the press and what actually is the case, essentially what I'm saying is take it with a pinch of salt.
Okay.
The stories you may or may not hear from set. These things that allegedly happen or don't happen. Sometimes there's a truth into them, and sometimes they are literally just made up. Because, you know, you're getting half answers and, you know, third hand talks. I'll tell you what, when I did Captain America, when I was casting Captain America, I was really privileged to, we shot at Longcross, hesitate to use the word studio, but that's what they call themselves, Longcross Studios in Surrey. So the head of Marvel Security, Barry, said to me, come with me, James. We're going to go and get to see something that nobody gets to see because it's kind of a special thing. He took me to, well, I was like, where are you taking me, young man? So he took me into this room that was plastered from floor to ceiling with previs art, with miniature sets, all of these amazing pictures and drawings and concept art and all this kind of stuff. And he takes me to one part of the wall and he points at this character that's Hitler being walloped by Chris. He says, that's you. There's nobody get, you can't come in here. You can't come, if you do come in here, you can't take pictures, but I just wanted you to see that this is what you're part of. And you go, oh my, how the flip did I have, what? Okay, why? Hey, okay, cool. Who do I get punched by? Oh no, good. Yeah. And that happens a lot. And, you know, the sets that you go on, it's very easy to get blasé about the sets that you see, you know, the New York set for the first Fantastic Beasts and obviously Paris for the second one and the Ministry of Magic for New York and France and the UK and the work that Stuart Craig does on these movies is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And you do get the chills when you see some of the sets that, because as I said, it's very easy to get blasé when you've seen them all before. The work that Stuart Craig does, is just incredible. And the costumes as well. I think the abiding memory of all of certainly the wizarding stuff that I've done is the atmosphere on the floor is, you know, considering we're making these huge movies and there's so much responsibility on David Yates' shoulders, but yet he bounces around the place. Hello mate, how are you? You all right, James? Yeah, great. Okay, so what we're gonna do for this? What do you think? What would you do? And we just try stuff, and it's, you know, to be trusted to have my opinion thought of. And for him to say, oh, okay, show me what you're gonna do, show me what you think you'd do, or show me what we could do here, is amazing. This, as I said, this kind of amazingly collaborative experience of such a delightful man to spend time with, and believe me, he is so good with the actors. He's just incredible in getting across what he needs to make the movie, getting across to the actors how he does that is just a beautiful thing to see. But you can't be in a position like he is without having an absolute steel core. You know, he does not suffer fools, David. But he is an absolute pleasure to be around. Him and Yvonne, his wife, they're one of the producers. They're just people that you want in your life, if that makes sense. They're just such a pleasure. There's such a pleasure to be around. And you know, the same for the assistant directors as well. The assistant director team from the PAs to Josh Robertson, the first AD that we've worked with for years and years since Atonement back in 2006. There's a real shorthand, I think, for all of us. And for the most part, people are smiling because people, you know, because it's, I mean, I get to muck about with a wand and have wand battles on the back lot in Leavesden.
I'm not going to lie, that is the dream for most of us.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Do you know what I mean? You know, for when we were doing the stuff with Colin in the first movie and for Johnny in the second one, sometimes you pinch yourself and you go, how am I allowed to do this and get paid for it? You know, it's. I remember when we did the scene in Captain America. We shot over like 3 or 4 days, and it was all at the Hackney Empire. So unfortunately, I didn't get to travel around the United States doing this stuff. It's just the Hackney Empire redressed. But I remember standing in the wings, kind of about to come on to do my bit, and I just had this kind of moment of going, how the flip am I supposed to? So how did I get here? I've got a real Hitler moustache. I'm dressed as Hitler. I'm about to sneak up behind 20 dancing girls and get walloped in the face by Chris Evans. I'm a jobbing actor who's from Cheltenham in Gloucestershire originally, you know, who wanted to be involved in film, and I'll tell you why in a bit. How on earth did I get here? with the limited range that I have as an actor, how on earth did somebody cast me as this? Okay.
I will say, if somebody said, hey, we'll pay you to let Chris Evans punch you in the face, I would not hesitate to say yes.
Well, you know, bless his heart, he always helped me up afterward.
That's good.
And now, obviously, his contract's run out, right? So
yeah.
Chris and Robert and all those guys, their contracts have run out. So you're like, wow, Marvel, if you're listening, this is the prime time. Because I think the world needs to know what happened to the guy who played Hitler, the actor who played Hitler in the USO shows. Did he go on to have a career?
Yeah.
What happened to this guy? I think it's a Netflix show right there.
Absolutely.
This, you know, this guy who's doing, you know, is going around touring, raising money, war bonds and all that business. let's watch that. You can take your Iron Fist and all that malarkey. Jimmy, what happened to the guy?
They've all been cancelled anyway.
Yeah, they've got their own channel now, haven't they? Or they're getting their own channel. It's all the Disney things, all Disney. We owned by Disney. Disney owned us. Yeah, so that's rather a ridiculous thing. I mean, there's lots and lots of ridiculous things, but I couldn't possibly reveal anything because I need you to think my life is much more exciting than it really is. So I have to leave this little gap. This is all a trick. It's all a trick. My life is incredibly dull, but I have to make you and all the fans think that it's incredibly glamorous and incredibly exciting. And yes, I did go to Soho House recently, but that's not the point. And I'm going to the Groucho in a couple of weeks. It's fine. But I have to make you think that it's much more exciting, you know, that it's the champagne and caviar for breakfast and cocaine and whatever it may be for lunch. But it's
sounds
it's
healthy.
That's the thing. I'm 28 years old, and I'm about to turn 43. But the reality is that I'm just trying to make my way in the world, do good work if I can, get paid, and try and make something that people want to look at, want to see. It's, you know, if people are going into it because they want the fame and the money and the women or the men or the whatever it may be, it's absolutely the wrong reason to do it. Go and be a YouTube star. You want that business. You know, it has to be something that's, without wanting to sound like one of those awful actors, it has to be something that's in you that you can't not do. And if you don't do it, it'll come out in other ways. You know, even if you suddenly put on a limp in a shop, or you suddenly go to the shop and you do an accent, you see if you can pull it off. It comes out in other ways if you don't channel it to something more productive.
This is starting to sound like my boyfriend now, and I'm a bit worried.
Well, there's an element of there's a slight element, I think, of madness to it. Certainly for me, anyway. I can't speak for anybody else, but for me, there's a certain element of madness. You know, it's forever kind of teetering on the edge a little bit, if that makes sense. You know, mental health is really important, and you know, I've suffered with my mental health over the years, of course, but I have ways of managing it, and letting the madness out is my way of managing it, if that makes not denying that it exists, not being ashamed of it, and just saying, you know, yes, I actually do struggle with my mental health, of course. For me, that's, people say you're not normal. I say, well, I'm normal for me. That's all I can be. So I do allow the madness to.
What is normal, anyways?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's like saying what's average.
Yeah.
If you've got a fellow that's 6 foot and a fellow that's 5 foot, the average is 5 foot five and a half or whatever. But of course, that doesn't exist. We're talking about median, aren't we? Did I just make some sort of math joke? Sorry.
Well, we've covered science. We should probably cover math, just to be fair.
I am absolutely the wrong person to talk about. I've got an absolute blockage when it comes to math. If you ask
Rolling
me math,
does too.
If somebody would say, James, what's 57 plus 48? I go,
numbers.
Yeah.
I just have this kind of absolute panic. My brain goes, No.
That's what calculators are for.
Exactly. What is 57 plus 48?
104.
There you go.
You said that a little bit too much confidence. I don't know whether I can trust you anymore. Yes. Yeah, but yeah, I can't. Brain goes, oh, whoosh. No, leaves. Brain goes off, joins the circus. Shocking. What are we talking about?
I had a question regarding Hitler. As a German, I'm going just right in. Since you played Hitler twice already, and we know that Fantastic Beasts is kind of going alongside the Muggle storyline of World War II.
Yeah.
Would you, if they offered you, would you go and be Hitler for a third time?
Well, yeah, oddly enough, I was talking to some friends about this, and I was saying, we're kind of following the path of the Second World War here. So theoretically, Hitler could be in this at some point. Wouldn't it be funny if I did that? Yes, in answer to your question, I absolutely would. You know, when I growing up, it wasn't the thing that I wanted to be known for. I'd like to be known for, you know, getting a couple of Academy Awards back to back, you know, something like that, love. But if they said that you can be known for playing Hitler a few times, you go, yeah, all right then. You know, because you know, I suppose what I actually need, a Star Wars. That's what I need, because I've done a Marvel. You know, I've done the Potter stuff. I need another big. Another big hitter, and I can retire on the money then. I laugh in the general direction. Somebody talking of Hitler, when my girlfriend at the time, she was working, and she went to work after we'd seen the movie, and somebody said, oh, have you seen Captain America yet? And she said, oh, yeah, I've seen it. And the fella says, my favourite bit's when Hitler comes out. And she said, oh, I know him. He said, you know James Payton? And she goes, yeah, he's my boyfriend. And he said, bloody hell, he must have been paid $1 million for that. To which he replied, do you honestly think if he'd been paid $1 million, I'd be here right now? The actors get paid too much, right? Actors get paid far too much on these hundreds of millions of dollars contracts. And oh, the 1%. Bring in the box office, do? Yeah. The rest of us are fighting around for whatever we can get. So £1 million, $1 million for Captain America, for the... I don't know, 5 day shoot that I did. I'll let you figure out the numbers for that. But let's just say, don't start high. You know, there were a couple of days of rehearsals and three or four shoot days, whatever it was. Yeah, you don't do it for the money. But that said, if you got one of those a month, one of those sort of paid jobs a month, that would be enough. But it's, you know, those they don't. It doesn't change your. Yeah, you're suddenly not driving around in a Porsche or living in a mansion.
No, me neither.
Yeah, the reality of the people's perception of what they think you get paid and what you actually get paid are vastly different. But you know, why would they know? They don't see my bank balance, they don't know. Why would people have a perception of, you know, if you're someone, even someone like me, and who's only very slightly in the public eye, through the two big films that I've done, they, you know, people have a perception of you being rich. I'm laughing. I'm not crying. I'm in no way. You know, I have to work. No, I'm in no way comfortable. I haven't got a buffer. You know, I don't need to. I can't take the rest of the year off. I can take the rest of the year off, but I'd rather not. If somebody said, okay, you can work from now till this time next year every day, that I would say yes, because work is so much more fun than fun. So said Noel Coward. And it really is. Work is wonderful. It's so much more fun than, yeah, quote unquote fun.
Yeah, it's honestly wonderful. A lot of people can say that.
Yeah.
Well, no, and I tell people who you know come and meet me at conventions and whatnot. If you kind of, I think you have to try and reframe things to make things a little bit easier and just to give it a different perspective. So I say to people, the important thing is to have adventures, and that may, you might be, you're going to go and do some shopping. Sainsbury's or Waitrose or Tesco or Morrison's or whatever supermarket happens to be nearest, because that's what we base it on. Consider it an adventure. You know, have a soundtrack to it. And if you reframe it as that, it just gives you a little bit of a lift. Everything, if you frame everything as an adventure, then that's what it becomes. Maybe that's me living in a fantasy. But oddly enough, it just, you know, and it's, I'm nearly 43. I think I'm 43 next week.
So. Happy birthday.
Thanks. And eight days, the 18th. Yeah. So it's, yeah, if you just reframe it, honestly, it does kind of change your outlook a little bit. I don't know if it is. I mean, it works for me, and it might work for somebody else, but it certainly works for me that instead of saying, oh, I've got to go to the shop, you know, I'm having an adventure to the shop.
I feel like this is Dumbledore style, young Dumbledore wisdom.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, if you take everything negatively before you even started, how are you going to be happy? Like, if you look at everything from like a positive angle, then you might just as well find out, do you enjoy yourself? I mean,
yeah, and it's, I know from, you know, for a fact that it's very easy to say it, and it's difficult to implement it, but you know, it doesn't happen all the time. I still get sad sometimes, because what we're all searching for, whether we know it or not, is contentment, because happiness, like sadness, for the most part, is fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
If we can find contentment within our lives, then that's what we're all searching for, rather than this kind of fantasy idea of happiness, which by its very nature is, you know, is like candy floss.
Yeah.
I think that's, for me, you know what, it helps me kind of reframe it and get through the days, you know, because some days are tougher than others. So that's what I try and remind people at conventions, that if you just look at it like this, you know, your life may not be where you want it to be or where you thought it would be or whatever it may be, but if you just reframe things, you know, put your headphones in, play a piece of inspiring music or a music that inspires you, and look at it in a different way.
Yeah, go pick up the Harry Potter books, go pick up the Fantastic Beasts film, and just take some time for yourself.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the important thing is, you know, you deserve contentment too. Everybody deserves that. Everybody deserves, you know, running water and food and shelter. Everybody deserves that, regardless of employment status or whatever. Everybody deserves the basic human rights. And contentment, I think, really should be a human right in the 21st century, when we're talking about immigrants and all this kind of stuff and framing it as terrible things like that American fellow does. You know, I think it's just unfathomable. It's like we've lost our minds collectively. Oh, it's absolutely lost in mind.
Yeah.
Sorry, we were talking about films, and I've got it weird.
No, hey, I have to go get my driver's license renewed after this, but I'm now going to think of it as an adventure, and it's going to be great.
Exactly. Okay, so yeah, you're playing a character who's got to go and get her driving license renewed, right? And then, but she's got to get it renewed because she's got a spy mission to go on, or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, so it's just.
I want to hear about that.
Please. Yes, I'll update next time. I'll let you know how my spy mission at the DMV went.
We kind of come up with some quick fire questions. And the first one we have is Marvel or Potter?
My favorite between Marvel and Potter would be Harry, Marvel, and the Order of the America.
Oh, I probably watched that, yeah.
Yeah, we thought, yeah.
Okay, next one, favorite character in the Wizarding World. Anyone?
Dumbledore.
Frank Longbottom.
What? Frank Longbottom. So we want to see more of Frank. Frank Longbottom and dear Alan Rickman as Snape.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Dalia Trek Little Heart More. That was from Robin Hood. Alan Rickman. Oh my God. But yes, Dumbledore.
Ooh, why is that, if I may ask?
Because he's the teacher you wanted at school, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's my favorite character, so I'm on board, but yeah.
He's just got this knowing, safe presence that you, if you're with Dumbledore, you know that you're safe, you know that you're loved, you know he's got your best interests at heart. He's the father figure. He's always the parental figure.
Yeah.
I feel and like got, we should send you some contradicting also, ones.
No, okay, because you know I love you know, in terms of Fantastic Beasts, I love Newt and I love Jacob and Queenie, and I love Ezra.
Yeah.
He is so unapologetically himself, and that's glorious.
Yeah.
And he's just such a lovely chap.
He's like, James, you know, like you're like the other Grindelwald, man, because you know, like with the stuff in the first one with you was Colin, and you're doing the stuff with, you know, for Johnny, and you're just like the other guy, man.
Oh, thank God.
Love him. Love Ezra. He's absolute delight. He should be, people should shout about him all the time, because he's as I said, he's unapologetically himself.
We do love him.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Brilliant.
We just like adore him. You just don't get enough.
Yeah.
And how do you choose? I love what Kevin Guthrie does with Abernathy. He's such a lovely fella. Or Brontis as man, there are so many, you know. I honestly, I can say when Dan and Brontis were doing their stuff, doing the rehearsal in Fantastic Beasts, when we watched the rehearsal with them in his house, never laughed so much at what Dan and Brontis were doing during the rehearsal. The whole crew was just absolutely giggling like I've never seen before. The stuff they were doing was just so, so funny.
Oh man!
And then then you try and match it, and you go, I was laughing so much I wasn't paying attention. but you know, it was fine. Yeah, I mean, how do you choose that? You know, each one of them has something.
Yeah.
You know, from kind of the acolytes, Johnny's gang. So Simon and all those guys that, you know, we spent a lot of time with over the shooting period of it. But it was just such a, they all bring something to their character, to these characters, and one of my friends, who I was in a film with, plays Lorena Karma, Sora Barbara Brown. I did a film with her a few years ago. She's a friend of mine. And then when she came on set, I knew that she was coming, so I sent her a little message saying, "Welcome to the Wizarding World." So it was great to have, you know, it's great to have people that you know come in the cast, and you know, it's the whole thing is, I don't know, there's all such wonderful characters. Every character's got this little bit of, there's something you want to know more about, you know, from the Porky to Skender to Stebbins to Nagel and Crawl and Craft and Carrow and Rosier, Poppy as Rosier and Ingvar as Grimson, and you know, all those guys that we spent so much time with. Yeah, it's great. Love it. Love them all. Love them all dearly. I love them all dearly. I do. That was quick. That was quick fire, wasn't it? Good Lord. Stop talking, James.
We've talked a little bit about the kind of fandom and theories, but what is your favourite fan theory so far? And just one that you've either completely loved for its craziness, or for one that you think, oh, that could go somewhere.
That's really easy, actually. My favourite fan theory, about out of all of the fan theories, is that
spoilers.
Okay, there's no spoilers. My favourite theory is that everything in the Wizarding World is in Frank Longbottom's head after he gets walloped by Leta Lestrange, and that's just a fan theory that I just made up just then.
That's a great one.
It's all in Frank Longbottom's head.
He's the key to everything.
Oh my god, if that were true, they'd bloody cast Michael Sheen, wouldn't they? I don't know, because you hear so many of them, and then of course you know the reality of what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to keep on top of what's real and what isn't real. I don't know. I think they're also brilliant. All these lovely theories that kind of, you know, it's like there's a whole universe of amateur detectives. I'll tell you for why. Because this leads to this, and if you go back to that, it leads to look at that, and then you go, triangulation. So it's this, the effort people go to find out more, and it just shows the love of it, that the people still talk about it and still want to know more, you know, and the people still are desperate for the world to continue, you know, as we are, because as I said, it's such a pleasure to be involved in helping make these movies.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that wasn't very helpful at all. So.
No, that's good.
I think Frank Longbottom is the key should be the title of the episode now.
Yeah.
Just probably. To confuse everyone.
And I would, you know, because obviously there's the we didn't shoot the stuff with Frank and Alison Simmungers and Neville visiting him, which I know, having done the, you know, convention circuit, that people want to see. You think, mm-hmm. Oh god, I should really just get some mates together. We should shoot that, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, yeah, definitely do that. And like, okay, well, you know. Busy, very important actor, you know, got lots of stuff on, got to go to the BAFTAs, got to turn down the Academy Awards presenting gig, because, you know, I don't want to be known for that, so yeah, I'm really, I've got loads of stuff on at the moment, so, you know, I haven't got time, but all that, you know, I'd love to revisit Frank at some point, just because he's such a fascinating character, and, you know, because the stuff with him and Alice, you know, it could have been him. It could have been Neville.
Yeah.
And that's dear old Matt. What a lovely fellow he is. Matt. Anyway, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all about Frank. Allow me to be Frank.
Should we offer it up to James to pick a question?
Do you have a question that you want us to ask the listeners?
What does it mean to you? One word answer. What does it mean to you?
The Wizarding World in general?
The whole Wizarding World. What does it mean? What does it mean to you?
Okay.
Because I love hearing. It's an open question, because I love hearing the answers to that.
If you want to send your answer to us, then you can drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also leave us a review on iTunes if you've really enjoyed listening to this episode.
And you can make sure that James Payton is in every film that's made in the next 10 years, please.
Yes.
Because I've got
a petition. Yeah.
Yeah, there's like, oh, three people have signed it. Great, I can be on Holby City. not to knock it, because I do it. They offering. What are they offering? I do it. I'll definitely do it. I said yes. Tell them I said yes.
We'll do.
Okay, write that down. you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. On Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, or you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. And you can also follow James on Twitter at Mr. James Payton. And you should, because he tweets a bunch of fun stuff.
I do a video every day on Instagram and Twitter called #AllRight. It starts with good evening and it ends with all right. at the end of it, and the bits in between, I don't really know what they're going to be until I do it.
So
you know what, it's for me, I like it. If people like it, that's cool too. But if they don't, that's fine too.
I'm Megan.
I'm Lizzie.
I'm Oriole.
And I'm Frank Longbottom.
Case closed.